We're here because we don't buy into the bullshit of mainstream culture. We're tired of the mundane, passionless careers we've been shuffled into as a result of this orchestrated debt-based system of rule, and the stranglehold on education and entertainment by cold, soulless corporations. People, yes, we are frustrated. Yes, we are tired. And we reject the pre-approved tranquilizers that are Monday Night Football and an ice-cold Budweiser. But we have to stop hiding. Stop hiding behind the headphones and the Cherry Popper 420 username. Let the world see that the resistance is strong and society is changing. There was a time to be anonymous, but that time has passed. And so the Higher Side Chats would like to present Conspiracies as the dawning of this new paradigm in the uniform of the revolution. Because bold fashion should mean more than some celebrity meat dresser frat boy in a silly pink polo. Conspiracies redefines bold fashion as having the balls to reject socially uncomfortable and unpopular truths from your radiant chest all fucking day. Conspiracies.net. Let them know that you know. Bold designs for troubled times. Hard truths. Soft cock.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of fire. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Higher Side Chats.
How's it going, Higher Side Chatters? Welcome to another powerful show, drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke. From sunny San Diego, I'm Greg Carlwood. And people, we all know the largest aspect of the big conspiracy is the manipulation and the complete control of the population. The elite try to dress up our enslavement with flashing lights and pretty colors, but the reality is that we've had our dreams, goals, and actions hijacked by green paper. And these sorcerers of the system have cast a spell of servitude to which we measure our sense of worth. And this power structure has all but guaranteed your participation by limiting your options, controlling your education, and applying just enough pressure to convince you that there's no time to think about anything other than your pace on the never-ending treadmill of capitalism. It's a damn shame, people, and today we're going to examine one of the possible alternatives you've been denied by mainstream culture. And today's guest was bold enough to turn in her life as a creative director at a New York City marketing firm and distance herself from the monetary monster in exchange for a sustainable life in an off-the-grid community, mastering the art of making things she once bought. She's the author of The Good Life Lab, Radical Experiments and Hands-On Living. Her name is Wendy Tremaine, and it's a pleasure to have her share a little of her knowledge with us today. Wendy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Greg, thanks. That was a really nice description of what you guys are about. I'm like so impressed.
Oh, thanks. I'm really appreciative of you being here. Sometimes, you know, I daydream about this whole off-the-grid, sustainable living lifestyle, weighing the pros and cons, the sacrifices against the freedoms, and I really admire anyone who's had the guts to do it, because I don't.
Well, thank you. I was just talking to someone the other day, and they were like, it seems so hard doing all this stuff. And I was like, really? Because going to work every day seems a lot harder to me.
Right. And I'm kind of right at that crossroads. I mean, I sometimes think of it as like we've all grown up in prison cells with the door wide open, but everybody's just afraid of what's outside because they're just familiar with the surroundings. So they'd rather just stay in the cage.
It's funny, isn't it? Really,
it's kind of sad, but yeah, I do feel that way. I actually just got back from San Diego, or back to San Diego from St. Louis. I went home from my 10-year high school reunion, and it was a blast, but I ran into a lot of people that say, I'm like, hey, man, haven't talked to you in forever. How's life? What's new? And you get the same response. Oh, not much. Just working, man. And it's so sad. It's sad to hear that be the summary of someone's entire decade, and then they don't think about changing things, you know?
I hear you. I too, you know, I've been living in New Mexico about 10 years since I quit my job and did this whole change, but I've been on tour with my book, so I'm going all over the place. And, you know, as I go out in the world, I just see, like, the working poor, people with, like, really good jobs, like, hey, I'm an editor, and I'm a this, and they're, like, great things. And what they talk about when they speak about their lives, it's all about like the things they don't have time to do, the projects they wish they could get involved in, the giant commutes, like the justifications. And it's like, wow, that's the working poor.
Yeah. Land of the free, isn't it?
It's madness.
You know, but let's talk about your journey. You know, when did you start thinking about making such a radical alternative change in lifestyle?
Well, you know, admittedly, I always kind of had an allergy to the commodification of culture. I did, like in high school, I went to a very middle class Long Island suburban high school. And the kids were like competitive over brands and clothing and all these things that had to do with status. And like, none of us had a job yet, you know, but they knew who they should hang out with. And so even back then, I was like very sensitive to it. And I thought everybody was kind of sick and I didn't understand like why I wasn't, you know. But I tried, like I went into the rat race and I was like, okay, let's do it. And I really, really tried. And I just found it so utterly unfair. I did not like employers asking me to lie for them as part of my job. I didn't like tolerating not being treated well at times. I just really never felt motivated by money, to be honest. And I didn't want to change.
Yeah, it's super tough. And it seems, I think there's a lot of fear around it, probably because I've heard you say before, and I completely agree, that people just don't know how to take care of themselves.
Yeah, it's weird, you know, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if this is true, but I like to think about this stuff. And, you know, my whole life, I'm noticing people very nervous, right? We have all these like nervous conditions now, and people are taking drugs for that. And I think maybe on a like really deep level, we kind of know that the knowledge we've amassed is all acculturated knowledge. So like how to run the media and how to be on the internet. And it's all this like civilization knowledge, but we kind of know we don't know how to like light a fire without a match and like grow a tomato and actually live in nature. And I think our nervous systems like can't tolerate it because we need to know that we know how to live, you know?
Yeah. And when you said it, it made so much sense to me. And I've even thought about going to like a survival school because I mean, I am a huge meat eater, but of course, people in modern society don't kill their own meat. It's kind of weird, but I feel like I should have to have that experience. You know, I should have to kill an animal and skin it and eat it. It sounds as gross as it sounds to me. It's so foreign that we don't do that. It's part of the process.
Yeah. And I wonder, Greg, how you feel about this, but I'm a woman, so I can't say, but I often wonder about the male conundrum in our time. Like, isn't there a part of you guys that really wants to go out and hunt that animal?
Yeah. I love, there's a Carlin routine where he calls it the pussification of the American male. Like, yeah, I mean, we can't provide for ourselves. We're just house cats. And yeah, that is a little bit unsettling.
Ouch, the pussification. Oh my God.
Strong but words. Yeah,
it's some weird stuff. I know. I feel for you guys all the time, actually.
Well, you know, something I've always been interested in is Burning Man. And that was kind of got you kind of on that path, right? I mean, what do they do there?
Yeah, it did. Well, have you been? I want to ask first.
Oh, I haven't been. I've been to some like something called the Symbiosis Gathering, some little festival type things. But, you know, that's the crown jewel and I haven't made it there yet. But it seems pretty fascinating.
Well, it is. And I think, you know, why it's important in our time, and I do think it is important, is we don't have another context like that. So we only live in one context, and you can call it the default world. It's like the civilization that we built and we live in. But when you go to Burning Man, you're in a wonder world. You're in a city, a real city, with everything from opera to hair salons to ice cream trucks to, you know, cafes and yoga. And it's a city and it functions really well and it has no economy. It's a gift economy. And it is so utterly different from the default world that what it does is it like triggers you in ways this world can't and never will because it's different. And when you get triggered, every time you do, there's a discovery like, oh, wow, I didn't know I was that. Oh, wow, I didn't realize I cared about this. And you realize you're like so many new things you never knew. So it's really like a process of discovery. And then on the other hand, it has a tendency to be like a reset button for people where you go to Burning Man, everything becomes so clear and you see all the ways you're full of shit in your regular life. Yeah. And it's not it's not untypical what I did. I got back from Burning Man. I dumped my career. I got a divorce. I like learned to be a yoga teacher, which wasn't even on my map before, you know? So I would say run, don't walk. You know, this is like the living model of Atlantis in our time.
Yeah, it's really interesting. How the gift economy, I've heard it explained to me before as like you have to produce something and then it's a barter system. Is that accurate or is it a lot more, is that too simplistic of a view?
It's actually not accurate, and there for a specific reason. So barter in the United States is technically taxable, and only a gift is not. So it's very important at Burning Man, and they are always trying to remind the culture there that barter is not acceptable. That's not what a gift economy is. Giving has to be a gift with no expectation in return.
Huh. And through that system, I guess because you're dealing with like-minded people, everyone seems to get their needs provided for.
Yeah. So, you know, what happens is it becomes competitive gifting. So by the end of the week, you're like, no more. Don't give me anything. Like, I have to take this crap home, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
But while you're in the city, what it feels like, the experiential level, is you have to get used to that every camp, everything you see is for you. It's meant for you to enter, to go in, to touch, to take what you need. Like, that can be really disorienting at first.
Yeah, I can imagine. But it sounds so cool. I definitely want to try it out. In your book, what seems to be a pretty big turning point is you made the pledge to stop making decisions based on money. I mean, how radical a change was that?
That was like the key moment, really. I mean, I got back from Burning Man in 2002. I think it was my second year there. And I literally drove across country and I just pulled into New York City. And 5 hours later, the World Trade Center dropped. Man. And I'm like still covered in playa dust, you know, this like dust that you pick up all over yourself from being at Burning Man. Mm-hmm. And I look in Manhattan and everybody else is covered in dust now, but a different dust.
Wow.
And it was totally cryptic. And I knew at that moment that this was like the symbol, you know, there's not 1 minute more I'm going to make a decision based on money because it's stupid. So, I didn't know what that would mean, you know, but I just let that be like a mantra. Like, what does it mean to not base myself on money? And it led to a lot of weird stuff. You know, I quit a great career and I moved to New Mexico.
Tell me a little bit more about that actual journey, the journey to New Mexico. I mean, I'm sure there were some big self-realizations involved with that, some logistical problems you had to sort through.
You know, it's kind of easier than you'd think. I think the harder thing, really, like the harder thing is to go from rural America into a city because you just have to like upcycle your nervous system and just start adapting. But when you go the other way, it's, I think, a lot easier. You're going from needing a ton of money to needing very little. You're going from having no time to having nothing but time. You know, life opens up and spreads out and it becomes spacious and you have time to like gather your thoughts and figure out what you really want and just do whatever your heart has a whim for. And that's, you know, we did that, but we applied it to living. So, you know, we went to New Mexico and said, okay, I'm not going to buy it. I got to make it. Let's start with shelter, roof over our head. Then we went to power, then to fuel, and eventually down to domestic goods. So really, I think the difficulty of the move is just making it, just doing it. We didn't overthink it. And then believing that you're actually capable of making all this stuff, which you are.
That's a big thing for me just coming off this high school reunion, and most of my friends have kids, which, you know, that's its own thing, but most of them have houses, and I'm living here in San Diego, and I'm like, man, houses here are $1 million. 10% is $100,000. I don't see myself having that sitting in the bank anytime soon. So I've thought about, you know, shortcuts to get ahead, or, you know, making a shelter, maybe buying land and building a house. But this papercrete was pretty interesting. I mean, are there techniques for building that you think people could utilize if they knew more about them?
You know, definitely. So, you know, there, what you're describing, Greg, is like the common problem. It's like, okay, I'm either going to have like $1 million mortgage in a densely populated area, or I'm going to live in like a rural area. And potentially, I think people worry, miss out on culture and live cheaply. So just starting with that for a minute, my rent in New York City when I left was $3,300 a month for my apartment. And my home today in New Mexico, my taxes a year are $300. So the first thing I just want to point out is, do you know how easy it is to make that? And like all the rest is free time. So that's the equation. You have to choose. So out here, you know, again, not wanting to live based on money, to me, it seemed logical to look to the waste stream. We're sitting on a pile of surplus that is the largest in the history of the world. There's more free materials out there than you could possibly imagine. So for me, I found paper. We had a recycling center down the street. They collected paper, but they pushed it to New Mexico's landfill. So I was able to get it for free, build a mixer, turn it back into a slurry, add some ingredients like a little cement, and actually build domes that are housing and buildings out of paper. And it was, I was able to build a 20-foot diameter, 14-foot apex dome for under $2,000. And that's a lot of square footage. Plus, it's so insulative, you don't really need heating or cooling.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds fascinating to me. I love the idea of that. But you said something interesting about, you know, missing out on culture, and that is a concern to me. I mean, have you felt marginalized at all by friends and family when you started making this transition? Do you feel like you're missing out at all?
I do sometimes. You know, I was just in New York City, and I'm a New Yorker, and the grandeur of the old buildings and like the amazing venues with these amazing light and sound systems, you know, I really love being impressed by that, you know, and I took advantage of that stuff and I still love it. The difference now is my rhythm changed. So here is where I live. This is my base. It's very, very cheap. I never need a job here. I just do what I want. Then, because I live so cheaply, I do something that's like reverse vacationing. So most people run from the cities to go vacation in the country. I live in the country, and my vacation is to go to the city. I save enough money by my lifestyle that I can afford to go to Paris for a month and like get a great apartment for a few thousand bucks and just be like, here I am. I'm going to feel better now, you know? So I do it that way and I find it to be fine. And then the other thing is like, when you live in a place that's sparsely populated, doesn't have a lot of culture, it's kind of your obligation to bring it. So I produce events, I bring musicians down, you know, and I do what I can to bring it here.
Yeah, that's super cool. You know, I think a lot of people would love to get away from their jobs and reclaim some of that freedom you're talking about, but they just assume the sacrifice and lifestyle would be too great. You know, energy, running water, internet. I mean, obviously you have internet. We're talking right now. But have there been any sacrifices that have been really hard on you?
Let's see. Well, I mean, just speaking of technology for a minute, I think it's reasonable to point out this is really different than the previous Back to the Land movement. I'm like very technology heavy. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, a Facebook account and a Twitter and a Flickr account and multiple websites. I have an online store. I couldn't do this without technology. And most of what I figured out how to make came from a YouTube tutorial. So, you know, that's really, really relevant and different from people who did this in the 60s. Mm-hmm. But as far as stuff that I miss that just really hurts, funny enough, I think the thing that I miss most is a little bit of competition, creative competition. Mm. Yeah, so like, you know, if you're in New York, San Francisco, maybe you have it in San Diego. Yeah. There's like always been like an underworld of art people who are creatively competing with each other. Yeah. And everyone's getting bigger, smarter, better. And I miss that edge.
Yeah, that's interesting. They say that's a byproduct of capitalism, but I always have thought, you know, I like being somewhat entrepreneurial. I enjoy looking at it as a game, not necessarily a means of survival. And so if needs were met, I still think a great deal of people would participate in that. Our egos would facilitate, you know, who wants to work on the new smartphone that everyone wants, whether it was given away or charged for. I do think that competition would still exist on a greater scale. But, you know, obviously, yeah, it's going to be less important when you don't need to do that.
I think you're right. I think about that too, Greg. You know, a lot of people, when you talk about that, like, we don't need a monetary system, they get really panicky and get nervous. And one of the things I hear a lot, because I do talk about it, is what about the people who are lazy and don't contribute? And I think that's really silly. Like, if you could imagine like a world without money where everyone does just what they want, trust themselves to do whatever they want and believe that that's going to be the best thing they can do for society, wouldn't it be like the saddest thing in the world to have someone who doesn't know what to do? Like, yeah. The world, they would, you would like stop and just try to help them figure it out because that person would be so impoverished. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we'd be mad at the lazy. I think we would, that would be like sad and we'd want to help them.
I agree with you. And sometimes when I'm trying to reach the conservative Republican type who thinks that the biggest share of their taxes is going to welfare, which is of course not true. But when I'm trying to reach that kind of person, I say, you know, the best thing for your safety, to protect what you want, which is really what you're concerned with, would be to give everyone a basis that is better than jail. Because when it's not, they're going to come for your stuff. You know, I try to appeal to them in that way. It's like, help yourself by giving everybody a basic need that's better than going to prison, because either they're going to get your money and get away, or they're going to get a meal tonight and a bed to sleep in jail.
You know, I think you said a mouthful there. Like, I don't know if it sounds like you've had the same thought. Like,
yeah,
crime is often a reasonable person making the smartest decision in the moment for their best interest. And when they have no other option, that common sense decision is actually the smartest thing they can do. It just doesn't affect you in a good way. Right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the most powerful parts of your book to me is, you know, you found yourself in jail for doing some protesting and you said to an African-American guard, do you realize your civil rights were won by people willing to protest and fight for them? And he just says, well, in a few more years, I'll get my pension. And that is such a great example of a massive disconnect from what's important.
It's crazy. I know. I mean, again, you know, people don't like to hear this, but whether they know it or not, I see the same thing coming from the previous generations who basically were probably the only generations who are going to get these pensions and all these payoffs, basically for giving the world over to industry and not bitching about it. Oh. So they get their payoff, right? But the generations behind them, me, we're totally screwed because the world's been given away. They don't need to give us a bonus anymore. We just are stuck in what's left. So, you know, my dad, who's 85, can get a hip replacement for free because he had that pension. But I'm in my 40s and I can't get a pap smear. I'm going to be here for a while, you know?
And that's if these corporations and stuff even honor the pensions and honor the things that they're supposed to be given.
Indeed. My dad was so lock solid that his pension can never be touched. And then a few years later, just recently, we're seeing the pensions disappear. So, yeah. And again, you know, I think this takes us right to that black and white moment of you've either got civilization or you've got nature. Those are the only two worlds we have. And one of them is actually abundant and can take care of you. And the other can't. You know, it just puts you in this weird game that you'll never win.
Man, you mentioned the technology aspect, and that was a real reason why I chose you to talk about this kind of stuff, because I have friends who've tried to go to off-grid communities and they just left kind of with their tails between their legs, like, I can't live like that. I want a blending of the two somewhat. And, you know, I thought hearing your interviews, it sounds like that's what you do. You know, you and your partner are pretty tech savvy, like you said. How are you able to keep your energy going? I mean, energy's got to be a huge thing. I mean, especially if you want to have some of those luxuries that we're used to.
Yeah, so we're off grid. You know, when we left New York, we had a little bit of a nest egg, and we pretty much threw the whole thing at PV solar. So we're off grid, and we keep a bank of batteries here. And basically, you know, we just started switching because of it from like two-cycle gas engines to things that run on batteries. We became very battery-oriented. And of course, because we're trying also not to be any longer part of the problem, we realized batteries are probably one of the worst toxic contributions to the landfill. Wow. So we tried to satisfy that some way by creating a circuit board and a device that desulfates batteries. So we're on our second model now, actually, and it's a little device that you could hook up to any type of battery, multiple at a time, and you can just take batteries out of the trash, out of the dumpsters, and revivify them, and that sort of solved that loop. But it's a great example of using technology to live a modern homesteading life.
That's probably the hardest thing for me. Like, I'm trying to slowly eliminate some bills, you know, eliminate cable as long as I have internet. You can't really do anything about electricity or fuel costs unless you're really willing to commit to that alternative lifestyle. But turning everything over to batteries, is that, what kind of difficulties did you face in that? Was there a huge learning curve in figuring all that stuff out?
Well, you know, again, when you have nothing but time, it just becomes like interest, you know, like, okay, great. I'm learning about electricity. I'm learning about power. This is super interesting. And it wasn't a big learning curve. Solar is very simple. And really, once it's set up, there's pretty much no maintenance other than refilling batteries with distilled water. So it's a really easy jump. And you're right, when you mentioned like electric and fuel, that would be the second biggie. You need time and you have to choose. So you're either going to buy it at the pump or you're going to make it. And if you make it, you need time. The biodiesel that we produce here for our cars, which are just diesel engine cars that we didn't convert, costs us about 50 cents a gallon to make. It's from waste vegetable oils, so local restaurants. And it takes about 3 to 5 hours a week, which isn't, that's not bad.
No. I've seen YouTube videos and stuff about converting your vehicle, and I've kind of wondered about their credibility, if it really was that easy. It's something I've thought about doing.
Well, I would recommend not converting. So I've done both. I converted an old Mercedes diesel so I can run straight waste vegetable oil. I found it problematic. There's a lot of clogs in the lines, and you're always troubleshooting and a million filter changes because that fuel is so heavy. But I found it easier to make biodiesel and not convert the car and run it straight into your diesel. So the only difference there is when you get waste vegetable oil, you add methanol and lye and you clean it yourself. And it's something you do in a 5 gallon plastic tote. It's not like a big deal. You don't need like a manufacturing setup.
Right on.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's worth it.
It sounds like it would be. I mean, another thing I think that scares people is if you're going to live without money, you're not going to have medical benefits, or there's a fear of not being able to get help if you're sick or injured. I mean, has that been a concern at times? You were injured pretty early on, right?
Sure. Yeah, that definitely is. And it's a biggie. I'll tell you what we're doing. And I think this is really about what stage of life you're in and how old you are and stuff like that. But so we were working. Well, first of all, I was never the kind of person who was buying into the medical system that we currently have.
Agreed. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So I was never going to like let someone put me on a prescription for the rest of my life or like do unnecessary surgeries. I don't consider myself a billing cycle. So I was opting out anyway and kind of taking health into my own hands. That being said, you know, working with power tools, building a homestead, I was like, well, why don't I take my arm off? I really want someone to put it back on. Yeah. So my partner Mikey and I just carry catastrophic, which is anything that costs more than $5,000 is covered. And that's great because, okay, we'll pay $5,000 on something big, but nothing big can ever destroy our lives and put us into debt. So that costs us about $100 to $150 a month each. And then, you know, the supplements, we consider our healthcare, our garden, living in a place that has no industry and pollution. You know, we just try to really take care of ourselves.
a big part of the conspiracy community, they fear economic collapse or a police state type crackdown. And, you know, they see it as a real possibility, but they're still marching along towards the cliff with everyone else. And that's kind of where I look at things like this and I see what you're doing. And I'm like, man, that is, you know, I need to do that before it's too late. I mean, do you feel like you've created a life that kind of operates outside of those concerns, or at least that you're better prepared if something like that were to occur?
I like to think that a little bit. I don't know that it's true. I think we're all in this together, no matter where you're at. But for example, I'm like one of the only, or I had been one of the only solar systems in my area that's totally off grid, not even connected to the city supply. I'm on batteries, so I'm totally independent. And, you know, I thought to myself, wow, if there was a problem and the military was really moving in and blah, 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 the first compound they would take and make their own is mine, because it's true. They would take it in 5 minutes. So, you know, what's the benefit I really have? And it's knowledge. Like, I built this thing. I know how it works. And that's what I get to take away with me. And they can take it if they want it. But the more valuable thing is what I have inside. So, I mean, you know, I'm a lot of people's apocalyptic plan. Friends in cities are like, I'm going to your house when it hits the fan. I think what's more important is this way of living. It calms our nervous system to know we know how to take care of ourselves. So your day-to-day quality of life is calm. You're not in a panic. What if? What if? And I guess to me, that's the greater benefit. Who knows what's going to happen or how long it's going to take. But if you feel good every day, that matters.
Right. And I think so many people don't. A friend of mine said something I thought was pretty poetic. And we were walking around just doing some people watching. He's like, you know, the only people that are smiling are in advertisements. And I was like, oh, that's so sad. But
oh, Greg, that's what I miss most, people watching.
Yeah, it can be fun. It's a good, a lot of cautionary tales out there of how not to be. But, you know, you went into this thing without a ton of handyman skills or a lot of building experience, from what I understand. I mean, you've just developed these skills along the way, right? I mean, what are some of the most impressive skills you've learned throughout this change?
Yeah, it's true. When we left New York, we had a soldering iron and we had a sewing machine that both of us could like barely use. And, you know, there's a cute little illustration in the book, and I don't want to downplay it. It's really important. But I think the first step is you have to get used to just starting stuff, even though you don't know how. And that could be hard because, you know, in especially corporate world, we're all sort of pumped toward this unreasonable expectation of perfection, right? Mm-hmm. So you just have to start, and then you're going to break it, and you're going to get it wrong, and you have to just accept that that's kind of messy and fun. But, you know, in New York, I had like 3 or 4 skills. I was in marketing. I could tell you what I did in like a minute. And now I have like so many skills. I couldn't tell you about it if we sat at a fire all night. But some of them are making botanical medicines, growing food and processing it, doing the home fabrication. So Mikey in particular is printing his own circuit boards and building actual widgets from start to finish. We do a lot of filtering for biofuel, for water, for beverages. I've done some building, which includes plumbing, electric, insulation, wood and metal work, textile work, sewing, silk screening. I know a lot about batteries and power. So, yeah, and you know, I'm not great at all those things, you know, but I'm like good enough that I can have a life of my own and not need help, you know?
Yeah. That's one of the most interesting aspects to me is just developing those skills. And it's hard to really imagine unlimited time or control of your time that way to just sit down and learn, because even from, I mean, since kindergarten, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week is taken from you. And you learn at 5 years old that that's just the way it's going to be forever. You know, you might get lucky and get one of those jobs that you have to work a little less, but for the most people, that's the way it's going to be. So it's kind of hard to imagine, you know, really just being able to sit down and tinker with stuff. But it sounds so so appealing just to have those skills, because I think you're right. In the nervous system, you know, that if your car breaks down in the desert, you're probably going to die. If system collapses, you probably got 2 days before you're going to die. It's a messed up way to live, that dependency.
Yeah, well, I'm curious, Greg, like if you were just freed of everything you have to do right now, what would be like the tinkering thing you would want to take on? Like, what have you always wanted to do?
I think for me, the thing I would find most interesting or fun to work out is energy. If I could power everything that I enjoy on my own off the grid, because I feel like that's one of those shackles that you really can't get around it. And a lot of off-the-grid communities, you know, it's just something they don't have. You know, they just deal without it rather than implementing it. And I couldn't do it without. So if I could really harness solar and really harness energies that were sustainable, I think that would be most interesting to me.
Yeah, I'm sure you'd have fun doing it. I'm always fascinated, you know, like when I talk to people like stockbrokers and, you know, whatever, people of all different careers, yeah. they all have like a secret thing. Like, I really just want to be an electrician, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's so funny.
It is. Or I really just want to be a bike messenger and shoot snot rockets.
Well, you know, I do this show and I also print T-shirts that are conspiracy related. And then I also have a 9-to-5 job that funds everything else that I enjoy in a middle class lifestyle. And, you know, I really think if I could just do the other two things and not make money from them or barely make enough to pay for that extreme insurance and the phone plan and the few things I wouldn't want to do without, I'd be way happier. And I'm kind of in that transitionary area. But I think a lot of people need to get out of the mindset that your passion's probably not going to bring you as much income as the 9-to-5 job's going to be. But you're going to get back what you put into it, and you're going to get it back in time and freedom and pride. You're going to have some pride because a lot of people don't care about what they're doing in their 9-to-5 job.
It's true. Yeah, I think you're really right. I'm thinking about the part you said where you might not make as much money. And I think there's something in there that, you know, everyone could take a moment to look at, which is, you know, the rise and fall of markets and the swings of money are so bizarre. And they used to make sense, like, oh, there was no rain in Florida, so the oranges went up. But now it's so convoluted because you know, money is being made on like weird models and trickery and financing tricks.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're saving money, do you really feel like you're saving something stable and secure? Because I didn't. And when I switched over from saving money to putting that money into tools that I could use to make stuff, I thought I had something more reliable than when I had cash.
Yeah, that's a great point too. You know, something I've thought about, I've talked to friends about doing this kind of transition, and some of the cynical ones, they have this impression that, you know, yeah, you're not really going to get your freedom back. You're going to get your time, but you're going to spend all that time trying to make, build, and get the things that we already have. You know, like we talked about spending time sitting there and tinkering with things. Do you feel like you have more free time? Is that a fallacy? You probably have more free time than you ever did, but do you feel like you spend a lot of it doing the hard labor?
It's a great question. So if you think about it logically, the answer is there. It's like, you're not going to build your house twice. You're not going to set up your PV solar twice.
Yeah,
right?
True.
You are going to make fuel every week and you are going to work your garden every single day. But like for me, it took years for me to learn how to sew because I had bigger stuff to do first. I had to build a privacy wall, I had to build buildings. But I'm never going to do those things again. Now I just maintain them. It doesn't take that much time to do that. So as the years pass, my free time increases exponentially, and I get to do more of the kind of labor that's like whimsy and fun. But to be honest, the thing I worry most about in my life is that labor should ever end, because I realize my happiness is very much in being in a rhythm, and that rhythm has to include labor. I see that firsthand. And if anyone ever took labor away from me and just like did it for me, I would be really unhappy. So I'm glad there's always another project. I'm building a bike rack. I'm building a new outdoor shower. Like, I never want that to end.
That's an interesting perspective. How Like, as far as conveniences like showers and plumbing, I mean, how do you deal with those? Is that a big stretch from what's conventional?
Yeah, my view changed wildly on these things. I never thought I'd be saying this, but I'm desperate to shut off all the toilets in the house and get rid of them. I don't want them anymore.
Wow.
Yep, I think they're really stupid. And I'm this year, is my main goal is to get an outdoor humidor set up, an outdoor bathroom that just composts. Plumbing is stupid. I don't want to fix toilets my whole life. You know, I don't want to be involved in it. Are really pain in the ass and expensive, and it doesn't make sense to lock yourself in a small room and like use it that way. Yeah. And it doesn't make sense to flush drinking water, you know, like it's crazy.
Right.
So I'd much rather be outside in a cool room that I design really well. Yeah, so plumbing's really a pain. I already disconnected my showers and I bathe outside exclusively and have for years, but I do have the benefit of having a hot mineral spring in my yard.
Wow.
So that helps.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people get so attached to that privacy in those type of moments. Did you ever have a struggle with that, or was it something you just were like, the pros outweighed the cons?
Well, when I was a city girl, like I definitely would have like listened to myself today and said, that girl's crazy. But I think anybody who showers outside after a few times or uses an outdoor bathroom, they start to prefer it very quickly because it's really lovely to be outside. I mean, we're all starved of the outdoors because of our jobs. You know, it's great. And you don't need a hot spring either to make hot water outdoors. You can just take any tank, paint it black, face it south, let the sun cook it all day, and you'll have a hot shower every night.
Damn.
It's free. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love hearing those little things. And, you know, it's funny about plumbing because there's a meme on the internet that's a photograph of some a volunteer helping some African kid. And he says, so let me get this straight. You have refillable bowls of clean water and you shit in them? And it is so
right.
Funny because people don't think about it that way. Like people on a lot of third world countries would die to have a refillable bowl of water and they would not use it the way we do.
Yeah, I find a similar sentiment. I notice, I don't know about you, but people seem to not know that the planet only has one water. And like no one's ever going to bring more and it doesn't make more of itself. So there's this like when I talk to people, I could tell they think that somehow water is being rejuvenated and, you know, there's more being made. But there isn't and there never will be. So when you poop in water, you really pooped in water.
That's funny.
Yeah.
It's
weird.
Well, let's talk about food. Obviously, food's a huge concern. We haven't really talked about it. Seems like right now, based on the book, you've got some pretty fine-tuned systems for food production, right?
Yeah, you know, like I said, once you get the big stuff out of the way, you get into the small. And Mike and I both love being in the kitchen because it's really like a lab and the payoff is so big, you know, in health and in just the sensuousness of food. So lately we're into like a lot of illegal stuff because the payoff's really high, like making your own alcohol for a tincture. It would cost me $100 a gallon to buy organic alcohol, but you can, you know, make alcohol just with a distiller off Amazon that's meant for water. So, and you can make that same gallon of alcohol for $5. We also like fermenting, so making kimchi. We like making alcohol for drinking, like mead and wine. We have a blast in the kitchen. I hope to be growing mushrooms next year.
Nice.
So do you do any of this at home? Do you cook at home?
No, I mean, my girlfriend's she went to culinary school and she loves it. But one of my big concerns with this stuff is I eat almost exclusively meat and it's so terrible. And I treat my body like a garbage can. And I wonder, you know, doing a kind of off the grid living, it kind of has to be vegetable based, you know, just for the waste and the amount of energy required to eat a meat diet on your own would be pretty taxing.
Yeah. Well, you know what we found? Yeah. So our garden obviously is right out the door and it's easy, but I get here bison that weren't even raised by anybody. They're just on the open range. So it's like beyond organic. And yeah, there'll be a hunt and everyone in town will kind of go in on it and buy the animal. And, you know, it's pretty lo-fi. Like someone will set up a butcher shop in their backyard and everyone in town comes and you get like bison for $3 a pound. But again, I have access to tremendously good meats. Like I just split a pig with somebody, so my freezer is stuffed with pork. And again, it's beyond organic. It's just raised, you know, on someone's yard. So, yeah, you can really get meat pretty easily, actually.
That's awesome. Do you ever worry about being raided or anything? Like you hear stories about farmers are trying to sell raw milk and they get raided and shut down like they got a big drug operation going or something. I mean, because the system doesn't like people to have examples of successful self-sustaining communities. Is that a concern for you ever?
Well, we've seen some of that here. Our community started a community kitchen, and by doing so, they decided to take some government money, and that was to help fund this kitchen. And the benefit of a community kitchen is if you cook in it, what you sell is legal to resell into stores. You can't do that with stuff you made at home. It's not a health-proof kitchen.
Right.
So to make a long story short, once they took that money, then the government was coming in, looking over their investment and saying, hey, you guys also run the farmers market. You can't have that raw milk. You can't have that raw cheese. You can't do this. You can't do that. And they turned the citizens who started the kitchen into police that were policing their own community. And it got really ugly and it was very fracturing to our community. So, you know, my solution to that would be don't take the freaking money, you know?
Right.
Really. Now what? They're a big pain in the ass.
Yeah, I mean, that brings up another question. Did you ever face issues and regulations with, like, building codes and the things you're building, or do they just not get out that far?
No, for sure we did. You know, it's a little Wild West out here. You can get away with a lot, but not everything. What we did to skirt those building issues was anyone can do this. You can go to a structural engineer and say, here's my crazy idea. I'm going to build a dome out of paper. And you can, you know, download sketch for free and it'll give you the ability to express your ideas visually in a form that an engineer can read. And in our case, he looked at our plans. He said, I think you're overbuilding it, actually. He put a stamp of approval on it. And once you get that stamp, you can take that to the state record. And once it's there, they can't turn it down. They can't stop you from building that method. So that's a really nice workaround for dealing with building inspectors who want to get in your way.
That's awesome. So
yeah.
It seems like you've just done so much. When you started, it was just you and your partner, and you managed to take all these different sectors of that are necessary to sustain life and just come up with all of it yourself?
Well, you know, again, thanks to the internet.
Right. Huge tool.
Tremendous. And, you know, we network. A lot of community for us is on the internet. People where we live are not necessarily technical or modern in that particular way. So we gained a lot of knowledge from others that we stay connected to through the web. And then, you know, just to make it personal, we have those web friends down once every year or two and spend a week out here with us doing skill sharing workshops. But, you know, it's been 7-8 years now. So we did a lot, but we did it over a 7 or 8 year period.
That's crazy. I'm just in so in awe of that. It's so awesome. But, you know, for people who maybe are trying to, like, they can't commit, you know, like me, who's not willing to go the whole way, but would love to kind of experiment with it and maybe save some money. You know, what are some easy things they can try making at home that would save them the most bang for the buck, like toothpaste, laundry soap, stuff like that?
Yeah, I think, you know, for each of us, it's about, well, I would start with a different question first, which is, what's in my waste stream? So every city, every region has a different waste stream. And you're going to find that there are particular materials that are really abundant where you are. So that's free materials. Like, start there. If you're going to, you know, not have skills yet and you're trying to figure it out, if you wreck those materials, if you make a mistake, if it doesn't work out, It didn't cost you anything. It was already going to the trash. Nothing's changed, and you got some experience. So I really like to tell people, start looking at the garbage. The other thing is to get a book for your region on just what's free in nature in terms of plants. It's really fun. It'll take you out hiking. It'll bring you into nature. So just go start finding plants that have medicinal value and experiment and see the effect it has on your health. So that also is free and economical. But I would say, like, I think people don't realize that if you just start chipping away and start making the things you bought, that you can actually change your economy radically. So in New York City, Mikey and I, we needed 2 six-figure incomes, and not really to be middle class, just to be like, okay. Mm-hmm. And 6 years later, we don't even need to earn $30,000 between us. And we're so abundant, it's silly. So it does add up, you know, the toothpaste, the shampoo, the biofuel, like it really does add up. If you don't mind me adding something, Greg, just because of the nature of your show.
Sure.
I there's something that I find very juicy in all of this, which is, you know, all the we have so many laws that are based on the assumption that we don't have common sense. And that's insulting.
Right.
So, you know, they're saying you can't drink that raw milk. You can't have raw cheese. You can't do these things because you're not smart enough. You don't have the sense to know what's good for you and what isn't. And I think that's kind of, for me, the edge of where we are today. You have to either take back common sense and then use it and do those things, or you're going to let industry do it for you, and they're not going to do it well, and they're not thinking about your best interest or your health.
Agreed.
So, you know, it's kind of like we invest in acculturated knowledge, which is the system, or we invest in natural knowledge, the common sense. And I'm sure we both need a hybrid of the two, but if you have common sense, you're always going to be okay. You're not reliant.
Yeah, that's refreshing to hear. I think a lot of people worry about that. I mean, the education system is bought and paid for by corporations that only really want obedient workers. And you don't need to learn things that aren't going to help get you into the workforce. So yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. And, you know, I think today it's like, well, you know, I think we're all like waiting for some big action where we can get some change. And some of the things that I just want to share that I feel could be powerful would be a demanding of a clearing of all the debt on earth.
Of course.
From country to country, person to person, bank to bank. I also think graduating college students should consider holding back their entry to the workforce and demand change from it and not give away their most valuable creativity and knowledge without demanding change from the system, because they can't run without them.
True.
So just a thought.
No, I totally agree with you. And I'm a huge proponent of the resource-based economy, the Venus Project, the Zeitgeist type of thing. I'm sure you're familiar with that because it's in your wheelhouse. But, you know, sometimes I get sick of and really frustrated of just trying to convince people that it would be possible. And I'm like, look, I can't do this my whole life. Are we going to get past capitalism in the next 50 years? Probably not. So then if that's going to be the way it's going to be, then what do I got to do for myself? And so I look at something more like what you're doing as a way to get out, because you can't wait for everybody else, because life is it's ticking away.
Well, I just read, I don't know if you've read Thoreau's book, Walden.
No, I have not.
I hadn't either. It's a classic, but I didn't really go to high school much. So. But I read it recently because people were comparing my book to it. And he said something in it that's a lot like what you're saying now. He was saying the reason he left civilization and went to Walden Pond to basically live off the land. He did the same thing I did, basically. But in 1835, the reason he said he did it was he was afraid that at the end of his life, having lived his whole life in civilization, he would learn that that wasn't living at all. And he would discover that he never lived. Yeah. And when I read that, I was like, whoa.
That's powerful. Yeah. I mean, one other thing that was really good to hear you mention in the book is planned obsolescence. I think that's an instrument in our culture that people just don't understand. Even styles and trends in the whole fashion industry is built on the idea that you can convince people that there should be seasons for a certain dress, and once that time has passed, that is no longer a cool thing to have. Like, it's so ridiculous, because clothes are clothes. They're going to be clothes in March. They're going to be clothes in July. But if you can trick people into thinking there's a fashion switch, that's the mechanic of planned obsolescence. It's usually more overt, like a printer that stops printing after 100,000 prints, or, you know, a light bulb that bursts after, you know, so many hours. But it is really funny, and I'm glad to see that in your book, because not a lot of people talk about that mechanism.
Yeah, well, trend I started on early on, because I created this textile repurposing events back in New York some years ago. And, you know, when I was really being contemplative about waste, I was drawn right to trend and clothing, because it's the most idiotic of all the systems, you know.
Yeah.
It's basically, I mean, trend can really be defined as an artificial prompt to dispose of perfectly good materials, even though there's nothing wrong with them. Mm-hmm. No sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, and people say, oh, but it's creative. It's really not creative to pick things off of racks. It's creative to make something and to hybrid and to hack, but it's not creative to go shopping.
True. I couldn't agree more. Wow. Well, Wendy, I mean, it seems like it's about that time. You know, I love the book. I love your story. It's very inspirational. Before we go, I mean, is there anything else you've learned? Do you think it's important for people to hear?
Gosh, you know, have a life. Just take back your creativity. And I would just, you know, encourage everybody, especially kids coming out of school, to value the thing they're giving to industry. Value it so much that you're going to make that industry work for it, change for it, become better if they're going to have you. But just remember, it can't exist without us. You know, we're the fuel on a dead system. We're the life that keeps it going. We don't have to give it away. So,
Agreed.
Yeah.
One of my favorite Einstein quotes, it's kind of relevant, but it's more about war, but he says the pioneers of a warless world are the young men who refuse military service.
Mm.
You know, without soldiers, there can be no war. You're not going to see Obama dropping drones himself with a joystick. He's got to have a guy to do that.
Right.
So, yeah, it applies to all sectors of life that we aren't happy with. We are our participants, you know, we're facilitating it. So we need to really stop the gears from moving if that's what we want to do.
Well, I hope, Greg, that you and I see a day where there's an opening for real change. I know I've been waiting. It sounds like you have too.
Yeah, but you're a lot closer to having it in your own life. So you know, you're not having to wait for that savior to come around. You've saved yourself. So that's the inspiration right there.
Ah, well, thanks. I do hope other people are inspired. They can trust me. The water's fine.
Well said. So before we go, do you like to give people your website, or tell them where they can get the book, stuff like that?
Sure. So I have a blog called Holy Scrap. The URL for it is blog.holyscraphotsprings.com. The book's called The Good Life Lab, Radical Experiments and Hands-on Living. You can find it pretty much anywhere, retail, online, Amazon. I hope if people like it, they'll write a little Amazon review. It helps me a lot. And mostly, if I could point people to Goodreads, where they could punch my name in, I'm about to hit Northern California. So I've got gigs from Santa Cruz all the way up to Hopland, and I would love to see some people in person. I have a really fun talk that ends in a juicy conversation with everyone who attends. So it'd be great to see people.
Very awesome. That also just real quick prompted something I saw on your Swap-O-Rama-Rama events that you put on. I was looking down the list to see if there's one near San Diego, and I got a good laugh out of one stop on the tours in Sonoma County at the Wells Fargo Center for the Arts.
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
It's pretty ironic, isn't it?
Yeah. They got their hands on everything. But awesome. You know, it's been a real blast, and I hope the next time I'm driving through New Mexico, I'd love to see what you guys have done. Do you guys do tours, or do you show people? Do you do workshops like that at all?
We let some folks in that are like-minded and really doing something themselves. If we had our door open all the time, we would do nothing but. Right. It gets pretty challenging. So we try to pick our moments, but we would love to have you, Greg. And anyone who wants to write a note and, you know, let us know they're coming through, if we're around and can make space, we'll try to do it.
That's awesome. Well, hey, thanks again, Wendy. Take care out there. It's been awesome. Great talking to you.
Thanks, Greg. Take care.
There it is, people. Wendy Tremaine giving us an out. Maybe sustainable living off the grid seems a little less risky to you now, a little less foreign or inconvenient. Or maybe we just see those inconveniences as drops in the bucket compared to the benefits of the freedom. The freedom to wake up on your own time, pursue your own interests in education, develop skills that you admire seeing in others. Be a guy who can fix a car or make a battery, for Christ's sake. Look, it's too late for me, people, but you can still save yourself. I assure you. Thanks for listening. Facebook, Twitter, share this show, review it where you can. It's the best thing you can do to make sure THD is still around if you like the way I do these things. There's websites, forums, people you know. They'll ask, what's a good podcast? What should I listen to? Mention THC. Spread that goddamn word, people. My transition will come on the wings of a few more Conspiraties buyers, so check out my shirts at Conspiraties.net. Thanks again, people. I will see you next week. Do what you do. Your move, CFR. Your move.
I can ride my bike with no handlebars. No handlebars. No handlebars. I can ride my bike with no handlebars. No handlebars. No handlebars.
Look at me, look at me. Hands in the air like it's good to be alive. And I'm a famous rapper even when the pads are all crooked-y. I can show you how to do-si-do. I can show you how to scratch a record. I can take apart the remote control, and I can almost put it back together. I can tie a knot in a cherry stem. I can tell you about Leif Erikson. I know all the words to De Colores, and I'm proud to be an American. Me and my friends are platypus. Me and my friend made a comic book, and guess how long it took. I can do anything that I want, cause look, I can keep rhythm with no metronome. No metronome, no metronome. And I can see your face on the telephone. On the telephone, on the telephone. Look at me, look at me. Just called to say that it's good to be alive in such a small world. I'm all curled up with a book to read. I can make money, open up a thrift store. I can make a living off a magazine. I can design an engine 64 miles to a gallon of gasoline. I can make new antibiotics. I can make computers survive aquatic conditions. I know how to run a business, and I can make you want to buy a product. Movers, shakers, and producers. Me and my friends understand the future. I see the strings that control the system. I can do anything with no resistance, cause I can lead a nation with a microphone. With a microphone, with a microphone. And I can split the atom of a molecule. Of a molecule, of a molecule. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, or let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command, because I can guide a missile by satellite. By satellite, by satellite. And I can hit a target through a telescope. Through a telescope, through a telescope. And I can end the planet in a holocaust. In a holocaust, in a holocaust. In a holocaust, in a holocaust. In a holocaust.
I can ride my bike with no handlebars. No handlebars, no handlebars. I can ride my bike with no handlebars. No handlebars, no handlebars.